Welcome to the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church. We hope our broadcast will bless you.
Our study this morning takes us back about 25, maybe 26 years ago, when my father called us into a room in our house to share his plans. Like all of us, he had plans. "I'm going to retire," he announced. He said the 30-something years that he had worked was good enough, and he wanted to try and do something a little different before he grew too old. He wasn't too sure what he was going to do, but perhaps he was going to grow crops. Maybe even raise cattle. He wasn't sure. And as a family, I think it appeared that we understood. It looked like a good idea that Dad was finally going to retire. And frankly, from my perspective, after so many years being in a government-run education system, in a developing country, it made sense that he needed to retire. He looked burnt out. Looking back on his career, I think he had done well. He had been a school principal. He had had free housing. He had free medical. Pretty good deal, right? And at times, he even had the use of the government vehicle for his personal errands. And in his paycheck, for some reason we knew that his employer only took out two things: his taxes and his contribution to a pension fund. So retirement sounded like a good idea. It didn't happen that way, though. Let me tell you what actually happened. On the last day of service, the day he said, "Today is my last day," the government sent him one check, one big check. That was all of his retirement. So he didn't anticipate to get his monthly check. They sent him one big check. And as a young man, I can still clearly remember my father was excited. You know, one big check, he was a happy man. He was bright. He was smiling. And he told us, "I'm making big decisions on how I'm going to spend this money." He finally announced he was going to use the money to build a house. And according to his calculation, which by the way I thought were pretty good, he thought he'd be able to build a house and maybe even have some leftover change to buy himself a farm. However, as soon as he started building the house, it dawned on him that his retirement check wasn't going to be sufficient after all. It wasn't going to be enough for him to even finish the house. And worse still, he realized that he would not have enough money for his day-to-day expenses. During the construction of the house, or worse still, after the house was done, his biggest worry was where he was going to keep his family, me and my brothers and sisters. And I saw my father start to lose weight. I saw my father lose his appetite. Oftentimes he said he couldn't sleep. And frankly, he was unfriendly. Sometimes he even missed church. Couldn't explain why, but he missed church. He complained, "Well, I'm not feeling well." He was emotionally drained. My prognosis, he was a worried man. worried about his future. And like most men, he wasn't ready to ask for help from anyone. He was completely absorbed with worry. If you were around him, you could sense the negative energy from him. I can still remember that being around him sort of affected each one of us in one way or another. We weren't as enthusiastic as we were normally. The point I'm trying to make by giving this illustration is these are all consequences of a person who's worried. Most of us have a hard time escaping from worry, don't we? And so earlier this week, as I was reading the passage that John just read to us, Matthew 6, verse 25 through 34, it reminded me of my father's situation back then. But it also reminded me of my own situation, my own memories. When my father was so worried, I was the least worried person. I suppose I was too young to get worried. And for some reason, I knew that God was in control of our situation. Things would turn out okay. But for some reason, I did not have the strength to support my argument, especially with a guy like my father. So in order for me to avoid being around him or being entangled in his worries and getting that negative vibe from him, I simply stayed away from him, avoided him altogether. On my own, things looked okay. The future looked bright. I had nothing to worry about. I was sure that by God's grace, everything would turn out okay. I think I had faith because I took many risks. Some might argue I was naive, but I think I had faith. I recall that even after I got married, the word worrying did not exist in my vocabulary. My wife quickly found out that risk-taking was part of my life. Again, I think I was just naive, but I truly believed that whatever I did, God was in control. Here's the point I'm making, and that's why I think the passage that John read is speaking to me, speaking to my heart. As I have grown older, over the years, I've started to spend a little more time thinking about some things more than others. Some might say I've become perhaps more concerned about certain things than others. My wife might say I've started to worry. Sometimes I'm not even sure what it is that I'm concerned about or what I'm worried about. A few years ago, it took me split seconds to make decisions, even risky decisions. But now it takes me forever to make a decision. Perhaps I'm a worried person. Perhaps I'm too old. My wife and kids oftentimes laugh at me at the type of things that I lose sleep over, the things that I worry about. As an example, a few months ago, I had no choice but to get my teeth pulled, right? I don't like needles. For some reason, I just become nervous around needles. And especially the thought of having a needle put in my mouth, I just couldn't think of that as something comfortable. And by the way, a few days ago, I read an article that about 10% of the population, or 30 million, right? 300 million population of the U.S., 30 million people have what they call needle phobia. In fact, they would even stay away from getting medication because they are scared of a needle. One would say they are worried about getting a needle. And once the appointment was made, the dentist appointment was made for me, I was so drained with worry. My mind was filled with anticipation. I was even more worried. You know how you go to a dentist's office and they give you a whole bunch of literature to go through? After I read that, I was so worried. At one point, I wished I was illiterate, that I wouldn't read and write. I wondered, what if the dentist made a mistake while he was pulling my tooth? It sounds unusual, right? But a few days before, I shared this with a coworker. Wasn't he glad I mentioned it to him? He pulled me aside from everybody and said he himself had been so worried about getting his teeth pulled that when he went to the dentist, he left his car in a no parking zone so that he could worry about getting a parking ticket and get his mind off of getting his teeth pulled. Worrying can be stressful. It can be stressful. Ever wonder why, as an adult, you spend more time worrying and not depending on God? And there's plenty to worry about for everyone, you and me. Just that we Christians like to call our worries prayer concerns. There is no shortage of prayer of potential items to worry about. In the passage we just read, the passage that John just read, Jesus mentions several matters of concern. If you still have your Bibles open, let's read verse 25. It says, "Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes?" Sounds like it's speaking to us, right? And sounds like Christ is speaking to poverty-stricken people. But I think that people who have plenty worry just as much as people who are poor. There is plenty to worry about for both the rich and the poor. But I think Christ is addressing two things that you and I commonly worry about. Number one, health. Don't worry about your life, he says, what you will eat or drink, or about your body. I think that most of us, like my father, are oftentimes worried about our lives. My father was worried about his life and our lives, his children. Number two, Christ is specifically addressing possessions. What you will wear. Jesus knew that as human beings, we oftentimes worry about not having enough of what to wear. Not having enough of what to wear. How about shoes and women? You know, I looked it up. I think this is part of Wikipedia. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Wikipedia. It's a website called wikianswers.com. Here's what it says. On average, a man owns how many pairs of shoes? Three. All right? How about women? On average, a woman whose age is between 13 and 16 owns 15 pairs of shoes. All right? And those who are between the ages of 16 and 21, they own on average between 25 and 40 pairs of shoes. And those who are mature, 25 and 50. This website says they own between 40 and 60 pairs of shoes. We are concerned about what we will wear. Here Jesus is directly addressing health and possessions. But there are other things that we worry about. There are many other things that we worry about. A sick child. A sick parent. An aging parent. We worry about accidents. Some of us worry about criticism. We worry about finding a job. Losing a job. Guess what? Sometimes we worry about the swine flu. And the list goes on and on and on. Again, it appears that the older we get, the more time we spend worrying. The more educated or knowledgeable we get, the more we worry. Education, or being able to read and write, has its downside, don't you think? I was sharing this with another co-worker this time. And this week, as I was thinking through this study this morning, I've never been to Disney, but this friend, a few years ago, took his family to Disney. And so one afternoon, he decided to take his 7-year-old daughter for a spin on what he said is the Space Mountain. I assume that's a ride. Oh, she was thrilled. But my friend was concerned. He was worried that the roller coaster would be too scary for this young lady. But she insisted. She insisted she wanted to go for a ride. Well, they went for a ride. And afterwards, she even wanted to go for another ride. They enjoyed themselves so much that the following year, they went back to the Magic Kingdom. And the daughter, now 8 years old, again insisted she wanted to go for a spin in the Space Mountain. But listen to this. As they stood in line, he could soberly see his daughter studying the signs that warn about the ride's speed. Finally, she said, "Dad, I don't think I want to go." The dad then asked, "Why? Why would you be nervous when you had enjoyed yourself so much last year?" She replied, "Last year, I couldn't read. This year, I can read." Isn't being able to read and write a nice thing? What it does, though, is that it enables us to worry about things all over the world. The fact is, worry can be an obsession. It can be an obsession. We all know that worry and anxiety are common sources of misery today. And in the passage that we just read, Jesus reminds us about the things we worry about the most. But here's the good news. He also tells us how we can win over worry. Though we as Christians, we struggle with worry. Christ reminds us that we don't have to be defeated by it. We don't have to be imprisoned by worry. Jesus tells us that life is far more important than material things. So often our worries are about trivial things. Food, shelter, drink, clothing, houses, cars, etc., etc. And even worrying about getting our teeth pulled. And this morning, I thought that we'd look at some of the lessons that Christ is teaching us to enable us win over worry. Jesus says that life is more important than the things of this world, and that if we seek fulfillment in material things, we are missing the whole point of life. The lesson that Christ is teaching us in verse 26 is that the point of life is to have a relationship with Christ. When we worry, we miss the whole point of life. That's lesson number one. Look at the birds of the air. The passage said, they do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Verse 27. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? Many of us who've had the experience of worrying look back afterwards, don't we? And we oftentimes wonder why we were so worried. It's been 26 years, maybe 25 years, since I saw my father struggle with worry. But in the end, he did just fine. He completed his house, and frankly, God has blessed him in the many ways that my father least expected. And as for me, here I am. Got my teeth pulled, a little pain here and there, but I did just fine. Worrying gets us nowhere. So in verse 27, Jesus reminds us that worrying does not add to life. As a matter of fact, it subtracts to life. Wouldn't you agree? Worrying hurts us. Sometimes we end up with heart problems because of worry. Some of us end up with stomach ulcers. Others end up with depression. Some folks take up smoking, alcohol, just to get rid of worry. You know, I only realized this morning that worrying affects our spiritual lives. We get so consumed by worry that many times we get discouraged spiritually. We make very little time, or no time at all, for prayer and devotion with our Heavenly Father. Remember in the verse that we just read, Jesus is teaching us how to have victory over worry. So it's fair, it's reasonable for us to conclude or to draw lesson number two from verse 26 and 27, that the rest of God's creation does not worry. The rest of God's creation does not worry. And yet, God continues to provide for them, right? I think that it's also fair to conclude that out of all of God's creation, you and I are the only ones who worry. And yet, God continues to provide for us. So let's stop stressing ourselves out with worry. Verse 28. And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon, in all his splendor, was dressed like one of these. They must look beautiful. I think Christ here is specifically referring to the lily. The beauty of a lily. You know the flower? Have you ever noticed that if you plant a flower in stinky manure, manure stinks. If you plant it in stinky manure, it will most likely blossom to be the most beautiful flower. It is not worried about the smell around it. Like each of us, one of these flowers are special to God. We are special to God. But what makes us special in God's sight, is not the outward appearance. It's the inward adornment. The inward adornment. God wants us to blossom, to bloom like the flowers, no matter what our circumstances. Here's the point I'm trying to make. If by God's grace, in spite of our troubles, our circumstances, or even our condition, we focus on building a relationship with Jesus, we are going to blossom and not worry. God does want us to blossom. Isn't it true that generally it is the blooming flower that is beautiful? Did you know that scientifically a flower needs sunshine? It needs sunshine to blossom, to grow, to look beautiful. We too need direct connection or light or sunshine from Christ. We need that light from Christ the Son in order for us to blossom. Did you also know that there are times when we are the ones in the way of the light? We cause it not to fully shine on others. And so we enable them to worry. We are enablers. Allow me to be specific or to be practical. I truly believe with all my heart that my wife, and like most of you here, are a God-fearing people. My wife is a God-fearing person. I know with all my heart that she believes on God for all her needs. She depends on God, and she takes her concerns, perhaps her worries, on a regular basis to God. She therefore has less time to worry, knowing that God is taking care of her concerns, right? So, because of the sunshine she gets from Jesus, she's able to blossom, even if she finds herself in the middle of trials and tribulations. Unfortunately, on the other hand, I am sometimes the shadow, making it difficult for her to get direct sunshine from Jesus. Sometimes I don't even stop to think how my attitude towards her affects her. I become a deterrent. So for my married brothers in this room today, you might want to consider how to be an encouragement to your wife so she can blossom. She can blossom. You might want to get out of the way so that she gets that direct sunshine onto her heart. And you know, it's easy to see on the face of someone a glow of reflective beauty when he or she, like a flower, has been filled with the light that comes from Christ. So the question I have for you, or the question I have for myself, is my attitude an encouragement or a deterrent to those around me? And so lesson number 3 from the passage we just read is, irrespective of our circumstances, let us focus our eyes on the Son, Jesus Christ. That's what Christ is teaching us. Verse 33 in the passage we just read reads as follows. But seek ye first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Verse 34. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. There is no doubt that worry is destructive. But here, Jesus is teaching us to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, meaning to turn to God first and foremost before we try to fix it ourselves or even seek help from somebody else. And I completely understand that these days, at least for me, looks like 24 hours is never enough. And it's real that we have kids to raise. We have husbands or wives to love. We have jobs to keep. We have goals, deadlines to meet. Others have vacations to take, and the list goes on and on. It's also the reality that all these things compete for priority with God, and they can easily bump God off of him being first in our lives. In fact, nowadays, it seems we no longer depend on God. When Reed was teaching the lesson this morning, he mentioned, you know, that we are so individualistic, we want to be on our own. We depend on our own. It seems we are what I'd like to call quasi-dependent on God. We seem to call on God only when the going gets tough. But you know, God is patient with us. He waits for us to get back to him. I've often shared this illustration with most of you, but I think it makes sense for me to share it again. It reminds me personally of my attitude towards God, especially in times when I seek his help. Our son Matthew is 6 years old, will oftentimes call me at work, wanting to know, what time are you going to be home? I say, why do you ask? Well, because I need your help. And he genuinely sounds like he needs my help. But one thing about Matthew is that if he needs help, he wants the help now. Everything is urgent for him. So as soon as I walk into the house, he will come to me with his situation or his problem. Generally, it's a toy that won't work right for him. The trouble is, and this is the point I'm trying to make, as I try to help him with his toy, he will not let go. He will also hold on to the toy and try to fix it as I fix it. And I oftentimes have to remind him that in order for me to fix his toy, he has to let go. Let go and trust that I'll fix it for him. But dear friends, this is how sinful I am. It's easy for me to see Matthew's attitude towards me, but it's a little challenging for me to see my own attitude towards God. I am a quasi-dependent on God. I only need God when the going gets tough for me. I do not completely depend on God. And for some reason, we human beings, especially we who claim to be grown-ups, never want to be completely dependent on God. We are quasi-dependent. First, we know what we want, right? And generally, we know how to get it. Even when we do consult God, we still try to sort of help him a little. We are quasi-dependents and never want to depend on God completely. We want things done our way. When we do not get our way, what happens? We worry. And yet, Jesus admonishes us in the passage we just read to turn to him first and foremost for help. He is asking us to have what percentage? 100% dependence on him. So, part of my job this morning is to remind ourselves not to continue to be quasi-dependence on God, but to depend on God 100%. Otherwise, we'll continue being consumed by worry. And don't get me wrong. I realize that sometimes we genuinely take the time to plan. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with planning, especially for the future. In fact, I think planning is time well spent. But what Christ is teaching us in the passage John read is not planning for tomorrow, but worrying about it, which is time wasted. So lesson number 4, careful planning is thinking ahead about goals and the steps and perhaps even the schedules and trusting in God's guidance. When well done, planning can help get rid of worry. When we get worried, we get consumed by fear, don't we? And we find it so difficult to trust in God. We let our plans get in the way of our relationship with God. Remember the passage? Proverbs 3, verse 5 to 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Don't let worry about tomorrow affect your relationship with God today. Lesson number 5. The whole passage that we read, in a nutshell, for me, has taught me how much worry is a reflection of how dependent we are on God. The more we depend on God, the less we expose ourselves to worry. The less we depend on God, the more likely that we're going to worry. Some people have argued that they have prayed and prayed and prayed, and God does not seem to hear their prayers. But be rest assured that God is listening, and he has heard, and his answer is on the way. One of the songwriters that my wife really likes to listen to has these words, and I'm going to read these words here. I don't know how to sing this song, but it says, when you have prayed every prayer that you know how to pray, just remember that the Lord will hear, and the answer is on its way. Our God is able. He is mighty. He is faithful. And he never sleeps. He never slumbers. He never tires of hearing our prayer. When we are weak, he is strong. So rest in his love and cast all your cares on him. Do you feel that the Lord has forgotten your need? Just remember that God is always working in ways you cannot see. Our God is able. He is mighty. He is faithful. As we close, let me leave you with this food for thought. The wealthy Baron Fitzgerald had only one son and heir to his possession, who died after leaving home. This was a tragedy from which the father never recovered. As his wealth increased, Fitzgerald continued to invest in paintings, and when he died, his will was found to call for all his paintings to be sold. Because of their quality and artistic value, messages were sent across to museums and collectors advertising the sale. When the day of the auction came, a large crowd assembled, and the lawyer read from Fitzgerald's will. It instructed that the first painting to be sold, it instructed that the first painting to be sold was that of my beloved son. The portrait was by an unknown artist, and it was of poor quality. The only bidder was an old servant who had known and loved the boy. For a small sum of money, he purchased it for its sentimental value and the memories it held for Fitzgerald's son. The attorney again read from the will. Whoever buys my son gets all. The auction is over. Jesus said, seek first my Father's kingdom and all his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. This is how we should stop worrying and start living. May God bless us all. Thank you.
You have been listening to the broadcast from the Midland Seventh-day Adventist Church at 2420 East Ashman in Midland, Michigan. If you are in the area, we cordially invite you to visit our church Saturday mornings. If you are a distance away, we encourage you to continue visiting our website and weekly podcast at midlandsda.org.